Ready to roll into savings? Visit Dave Gill Chevrolet at 4700 East Broad Street in Columbus, your hometown Chevy experts. Right now, take advantage of tariff-busting deals on some of our most popular models. Experience the bold new 2025 Silverado 1500 with its powerful V8 engine and cutting-edge tech. Or discover the all-electric 2025 Chevy Equinox EV for an eco-friendly commute without compromising style or range. Looking for value? Browse our extensive inventory of certified pre-owned vehicles. From sporty coupes to family-friendly SUVs, each rigorously inspected for your peace of mind. Cruise over to Dave Gill Chevrolet or visit us online today at DaveGillChevy.com and drive home happy.
What's up, lightweights? Today we have Alex Warren, TikTok superstar, YouTube powerhouse, and the voice of an angel.
What an introduction. That's sick.
Your songs are incredible.
Thank you.
You obviously always have been singing.
Yes.
And then you did YouTube, right? You left it to pursue your music career. Mm-hmm. And it's been crushing.
Yeah. So, I mean, I started social media off singing, which was something that if you scroll all the way down, you'll see. And no one gave a absolute fuck. So I just started doing comedy videos. And obviously, as we're very well aware, that those had some controversy. And yeah, and I think it was just a big thing was just finding myself. And so I realized that I started this off doing music. I wanted to, you know, pursue that. And I feel like I had a story to tell with everything I've lived. And the rest is history.
And you started doing that on Vine?
Before Vine, even, when I was posting singing videos onto like YouTube pretty much, and like I like on a separate account no one ever knows about because God, they're fucking awful, but
they're still up.
Yeah, they're somewhere floating around the ether if you find them.
Was it under your name or did you have a moniker?
I had a moniker. It was pretty cool.
What was it?
Yeah, it was
if you don't want to say it.
It was like Alex Man something. Alex Man something. That's all I'll give you.
And then what kind of songs were you doing?
I was just doing covers. I think I was always part of a musical family. And then I think music a lot of times was for me, with everything I've gone through, just a coping mechanism to be able to like talk about it. I was a hopeless romantic. I was a chubby, fat, white kid.
Same.
And I quite literally, dude, I thought a backflip would get me a girlfriend. I thought being able to sing could get me a girlfriend, so I'd do talent shows in like fifth grade and I'd be like, this song's for my baby, easy come easy, and then sing Grenade and absolutely fucking bomb that shit. And there's a video of that somewhere too, so someone has it, of me, like, I remember seeing the video, and it's literally for, I have really bad stage fright, and like that was just terrible.
You have stage fright?
Had. I don't have it as much. I mean, I for a job I perform, so I mean I kinda can't have stage fright, but I think I just always struggle with anxiety, and I'm always scared of failing.
There's something cool about doing YouTube where, as scared as you can be, you're doing it in the comfort of your own home. I used to do singing videos too. I waited till everybody was out of the house and they were gone for an hour. That way I can get the right take and then upload it. But there was still a fear of posting it on YouTube because I knew people were going to see it, especially people that I knew, and they were going to give me feedback. And they're like, I saw your video. Did you fear that as well? Or once it was out there, you kind of were just letting it coast?
No, because I was oblivious to the fact that I may not have been the best. Like, I always thought I could sing, and I used to actually suck a little bit. Uh-huh. And I used to just post these singing videos, and then everyone would say, like, oh, this is good, or oh, this is ass. And I think I just never really paid attention to it. And then one day, I posted my singing video while I was, like, I hadn't posted a singing video in a while. I gave up on it, and I was doing the comedy stuff. We were in Hype House, and it was like 1 a.m., and Cover's brushing her teeth, and I'm just on the shitter. And I just start singing a song, and I posted it, and the next morning, it was at 10 million views. And I had JVKE, the guy who does Golden Hour, reach out to me, and he was like, hey, do you want to write a song? And I was like, I had a song from when I was 15 that I'd love to write and or finish, and we finished One More I Love You there.
That's insane.
Yeah.
All because you were doing the comedy video, someone reached out.
Yeah, and then I just randomly posted a singing video and it did really well.
And that blew up on TikTok?
Yeah, on a second account that I created that night.
That was your first viral?
No, we were already part of Hype House at the time. That was my first singing viral song, right? Or a singing viral video, yeah.
Did something click in your brain at that point that you can pursue this?
Yeah, and so like after that I started, like, the problem is that everyone at that time was doing music. So like every TikToker, so the minute I posted the singing video, everyone was like, oh great, another TikToker who thinks they can sing. And I'm like, well guys, hold on. I have a story. let me tell it. So I waited a whole year after that to post a song. And then I posted my song. And
how long did you have it recorded for?
I had it recorded for a year. Like, we recorded it right after I posted that video, and then we waited a full year. We moved into a new house. Hype House kind of died down, and then I posted the song, and it did really well, which I was stoked about.
And did you wait for that reason to try and let the buzz of something else die before you?
Not necessarily. I think it was just all about timing. There's a lot of moving parts in the music industry that no one kind of talks about, where, like, you have mixing, mastering, you have politics in the music industry, where, like, I wasn't signed to anyone. I was independent. I had all these things. And when you put out a song, you need to be represented by someone or do it yourself and pay for something like DistroKid, if you're familiar with what that is. It's like a TikTok, but you can post to all the different DAWs. Or not DAWs, DSPs.
Like, and Spotify, Apple.
Yeah. But yeah, so there's just a bunch of, like, little scummy things in the background that, like, managers were trying to do. And I was just like, I just want to put out the song. I don't even know if I want to pursue music. If people are going to fucking hate it, I don't want to bombard people. Let me just put out this fucking song. Put out the song. And I was like, all right, I'm doing more of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember when it dropped, your voice literally was just so powerful.
Thank you. I appreciate it. That was definitely, it's crazy how long ago that was and how different my voice has become because of it.
What fear did you have posting that versus your regular YouTube video?
Well, my whole thing was, like, this was authentically me. I think for the longest time, especially watching, like, David and taking on kind of that, like, vlog style, and also kind of, like, accidentally taking a lot of the mimics of him, I felt like I lost myself in a little bit. Like, I didn't know who I was growing up without, like, a dad or any of those things. You kind of don't have anyone to kind of teach you who you are. And so for me, doing that and also being able to tell my story was kind of like a, hey, I'm Alex, and this is my first time introducing my most authentic self. And I think that's scary. That's scary for everyone. I think regardless of who you are, everyone on the internet has, like, a persona that they play or a person they wanted to be, and so they emulate that in their content and in their personalities on social media, and then they're fully different on a back thing, but what you see is what you get type of thing, and that's scary. That's scary to do.
What was the response from the video versus your song? Because obviously your videos were fun, happy-go-lucky, but the song is so much more heartfelt.
I think it was a full 180, but I was shocked that everyone cared. Like, that was the thing where, you know, with, like, with the vlogs, like, I had to mute a lot of comments. I had to mute the David Dobrik comments. I had to mute, like, all this stuff. I didn't mute anything. Literally, that post was fully everything, and there wasn't one. I scrolled all the way, and I found, like, two hate comments, and I was like, that's nuts, because the song is blowing, the music video is blowing up, the song's blowing up, and no one is commenting, like, oh, David Abercrombie wants to be Louis Capaldi. Like, it was literally like, this is fucking insane. I lost my dad and I feel some sort of way. And I was like, this is nuts.
That's crazy.
I know. It was the coolest feeling ever. I think that's, like, as a musician, you're constantly chasing that feeling.
Can we talk about your YouTube process, the shooting, your editing, posting?
Yeah.
And kind of just, I want to know what everything was like at the height of all of your vlogging.
Hype House. So I was vlogging for a while. If you, like, I took down a lot of the videos, but, like, I've been posting videos since, like, 2011. I was 11 years old, and there was a webcam, and I would film in front of it. But once Hype House blew up, no one was used to it. I think we just had so many people waiting to see what was happening in that house, especially because it was COVID. So no one could leave their houses. We were just doing really dumb shit. Like, we were buying random stuff and fucking around in a mansion with all our friends. And I think that was kind of like a reality show for a lot of people, especially the vlogs. So we had, you know, so many different people vlogging at the time, and it gave everyone different perspectives of it. But I would film all day, every day, and then I would edit all day for one day.
Post by yourself?
It, yeah, post it that day, and then start filming again. And that was kind of like the whole process. So I would film for 6 days. On the seventh day, I would start editing right in the morning or the night before, and I would upload by noon or four that day. And it would just vary on, like, I would look at who posted, and it's like, okay, do I want to compete with that video? So, like, if David posted, I wouldn't post that day. But then it started becoming a radical, and I was like, fuck, when is he posting? I don't want to post this day, because then you're competing.
Yeah.
Back in that time, like, when everyone was, because everyone at that time was, like, doing really, really well. I think it was just because there was an influx of people on the platform. So then it was just kind of like you didn't want to collide with everyone else's shit.
And then as far as your ideas of, you filmed for that week.
Yeah.
Were you stressed that you didn't have enough footage?
Yes. And sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
And if you didn't, you would then go, all right, quick, I have to do this. Oh, I know that a, like, all right, guys, that's it for today's video. If you enjoyed it, go ahead and like, that'll take 20 seconds. And so I can add 20 seconds. Is that up to 4 minutes, 5 minutes? Because I don't want to post a 3 minute video because like, that's lame. Like, everyone was posting 4 minutes or more, you know? And that was something where you were constantly like running around trying to make sure you did. But at a certain point, you kind of get into a rhythm on like, oh shit, I'm at 4 minutes. I know I'm at 4 minutes regardless. And I can always add these things or take away and add it to the next one.
How strict were you on what you shared? Was there a threshold of like, ah, this sucks, the audio is not good, I didn't film it correctly?
Yeah, I was really, really, really like, what's the word? Like,
meticulous?
I wouldn't put it out if it had like bad lighting or if it had bad audio, or like, I was really weird about it. But I think that was also just because I wanted it all to flow, and if there was something really different, I was kind of like, oh, that throws me off.
When you heard that one of your friends was filming a really cool bit, did you go with an intention of what kind of idea you wanted to try and film, or was it whatever happened, that's what you were capturing?
Fuck, that's actually a good-ass question. I don't know. I didn't think a lot of people at that time weren't really filming really cool bits, like, if that makes sense, in our group.
Wouldn't, like, Thomas, like, plan something, or, like, when Dominic would come and do a science experiment?
Oh, sure.
That type of thing.
Most of the time, I was behind it. But if let's just say Thomas was kind of, his whole idea was with his vlogs was to be all raw, don't do anything, as in like, oh, whatever everyone's doing, like this is like a reality show for everyone. So he really wouldn't set up things. But like if he was doing a prank, it was typically like, no, he wouldn't tell anyone. So you really wouldn't know. But
did you try to get involved on those pranks so you can kind of help out?
If someone needed it. I don't think it was like, it was kind of something where like, everyone, I think there was an unspoken thing where like I wanted my stuff for myself and he wanted his stuff for himself, and so we never kind of tried to collide. But I think sometimes I'd like film if he was doing something, he's like, hey, you want to come? And I'm like, sure. I would film like, oh, for Thomas's thing, he's doing this, go check it out. And then I would put some funny thing just to put time in, I guess.
Yeah,
that's so funny. I haven't thought about this in so long. I stopped vlogging, I think, like 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, and I totally forgot that was a part of my life.
That's so funny how you kind of move on to something completely new, and it's just like, you're done with it.
Well, I started getting really, really, really depressed with the videos. I think after a certain time doing it for 3 years, there's only so much you can do. I always envied David for that. David could figure out fucking anything to do, and I didn't know how he came up with half the shit he came up with, but I think it was something where we were going to a wedding and I almost contemplated not going because I couldn't bring my camera to film it. And I had to take a step back and be like, what the fuck is wrong with me? And I think those were things where it's like I'm missing out on crucial parts of my life because I'm so focused on filming it that I'm gonna miss it. And I don't remember a lot of things back from like those cool last days. Like you're asking me about Hype House and you're asking me about all these things. And I'm like, I can only tell you what I filmed. I don't remember anything past that, and it's like, that sucks. Like, imagine going to college and you were so busy filming your college experience you don't actually remember it, you know? And like, when you post vlogs, especially 4.5 minute vlogs, they're filtered, so like you only see what I chose to give you, and it's like, that sucks. Like, I want to remember these crazy memories I couldn't post, you know?
Once you posted it, did you delete all the footage? Did you back everything up?
No, I mean, I have a fuck ton of SD cards, but eventually when you have that much stuff and you're in a quick pickle, like, you kind of have to like clear SD cards, and I think that was like annoying. I constantly was deleting shit. Yeah.
What was one moment that you filmed that you were so pumped you got it on camera, you filmed it right, the audio was great, the lighting was perfect, the framing was exactly how you needed it?
My friend Papper was bucked off a horse.
What is bucked off?
I loved getting like animals, but like my friend Papper's on the bigger set, and I always thought it'd be hilarious to watch someone who's a bit bigger on a horse, and like I was bigger at the time, so I can say this, but it was something where like he was like, fuck yeah, like let's ride this fucking horse. And he put on a helmet, he took off everything, he went in a Speedo, and he hops on the horse, and he's never ridden a horse in his entire life, and immediately once he gets on the horse kicks the back and he goes flying. And I wasn't planning on filming it because we weren't filming the bit yet, but I just pressed record and I was like, okay, Pappers. And as I'm explaining it, the fucking horse just goes, and this, he just like goes and then just lands. And I was like, holy, that's my favorite thing I've ever filmed to this day.
Yeah.
And it was so funny. I think we were all like dying for like 20, 30 minutes. It was great.
Was this during COVID?
No, this is at the final Hype House that we were at, Santa Rosa Valley. So this is right after COVID.
For people who may not be as familiar with Hype House, what exactly was it?
Hype House was a collective of a bunch of people. It started in 2019. I was in my hometown of Carlsbad with like a group of people. Huddy would come down, and we would all just film my vlogs. This is right when I started getting like somewhat popular. This is right when Jason did the or a little bit before Jason did that roast, and he's like, "You stopped vlogging, you gave your career to Alex Warren." You remember that?
Yeah.
I remember we watched that all in my living room, and we're like, "That's fucking hilarious." But we
you all knew each other through TikTok.
No, we all grew up together. And then Huddy was introduced through like just a mutual friend. But I grew up with half the people there. And then after that, Thomas started coming around, and he was like, "Hey, like, you know, I just left Team 10. Would love to, like, I see you're doing this with a bunch of people. Would love to, like, kind of like put it together and do it in LA." And I'm like, "I."
Sometimes it could be hard eating healthy when you're feeling like you're giving up flavor or fun. That's where I have a food hack for you. Washington Red Raspberries are a clean, simple, and seriously delicious way to add more nutrition to your day. They're American grown, picked at peak ripeness, and frozen within hours to lock in nutrients like fiber, antioxidants, and vitamin C. And they have no added sugar, just fruit, as nature intended. I try to get my fruit in all fun ways, whether it's a smoothie, a salad, it's really just a treat. Frozen Washington Red Raspberries are one of the best kept secrets in the freezer aisle. They're naturally low in sugar, high in fiber, and support gut health, blood sugar balance, and overall wellness. And because they're frozen at the peak of ripeness, they deliver big time nutrition and flavor year round. So whether you're trying to clean up your snacks or build better meals, these berries are a total win. You can find frozen Washington Red Raspberries in the frozen fruit section of most major grocery retailers. And Costco. If you want to discover new ways to use American frozen red raspberries, get more details on where you can grab them simply by going to redraz.org. That's redraz.org. You'll find recipes, health tips, retail locations, and everything you need to make Washington Red Raspberries a regular part of your routine.
Look for product of the U.S.
Are you ready to lose weight? With Effecty, getting access to powerful GLP-1 weight loss medications has never been easier or more affordable. Effecty offers compounded semaglutide, the same active ingredients as the popular name brands, but for up to 80% less. These medications work by regulating appetite and blood sugar, helping you lose weight in a sustainable, science-backed way. Getting started is simple. Fill out a short medical questionnaire, then connect with a licensed provider through a chat-based telehealth consultation. If you're eligible, your prescription gets shipped straight to your door. No hassle, no waiting rooms. With transparent pricing, no hidden fees, and no membership required, Effecty is committed to making proven weight loss treatments accessible to everyone. I do have a few friends who have used GLP-1, and it helps get them on the right path to sustain a healthier lifestyle. It's helped with weight loss and confidence. So if you're ready to level up your weight loss game right now, my listeners can get $50 off of GLP-1 weight loss treatments at Effecty.com with my code LIGHTWEIGHT at checkout. That's Effecty.com, EFFECTY.com, and use code LIGHTWEIGHT to get $50 off your first month of GLP weight loss treatment. No hassles, no memberships, and no hidden fees. Get started today. We all want to feel our best, but let's be real. Some wellness trends are hard to stick with. Taking shots of apple cider vinegar? No thanks. Swallowing giant vitamins? Not for me. Goalie Nutrition is wellness made easy and delicious with their chewable gummies. From apple cider vinegar for digestion support to ashwagandha for stress relief, Goalie's gummies fit effortlessly into your routine. They're made with high quality ingredients, taste amazing, and are packed with essential B vitamins to help you feel your best every day. Apple cider vinegar has been used for centuries as a traditional remedy for digestion and gut health, now in a convenient gummy form. More than just ACV, from ashwagandha for stress relief, plus they're packed with essential vitamins, organic ingredients, and no artificial nonsense. No mixing, measuring, or mess. Just grab, chew, and conquer your day. Made for every lifestyle with a formula that works for you. Plus, they're made in the USA. Loved worldwide. So head to goalie.com now and get America's number one ashwagandha and apple cider vinegar gummies at an exclusive 42% off. Give them a try, risk-free, backed by their money-back guarantee. Because wellness should be simple, effective, and delicious. Don't wait. Visit goalie.com today.
We'll never move to LA. I fucking hate that place. And fucking a month later, that dude texts me and he goes, "Hey, I have a house, a mansion. Come live with us. Bring all your friends and we'll do something. You can take all the stress off you," because I was fucking stressed. I was a 19-year-old paying for everyone's rent, filming vlogs. And he was like, I was like, fuck, okay. I bought out my little Huddy, paid for my lease to be bought out. And we moved up, and that week we started Hype House. We came up with the name, and then did a photo shoot with Bryant. And then right the day after we did the photo shoot, we posted the photos, and all of a sudden it blew up.
You guys posted the photos?
Yes.
And then was it all systems go? Everyone kind of took on their own roles of how they were going to contribute to the group?
What was nice is most people in that house wanted to be like TikTok fame was really famous in general. So like the minute that all started happening, everyone kind of went AWIRE and just like started posting fuck ton. Everyone's like, okay, we got to post 3 times a day. We have to do this. And everything was very calculated. Like that was the thing that not a lot of people thought. Like everyone kind of thought that everyone there was just grabbing everyone near them and be like, let's film a TikTok. And that's how it started. Like I remember Addison would come over. Addison, Charlie, and Dixie never lived there, but they would come over and be like, hey, I need, and they would kind of do, they would go, hey, Taylor, I need you. Da da da. I need you. Come over here for this video and explain them on the spot and then do it. And I was like, I am so fascinated by this. Because at that time, I still wanted to do music. I was like, this is so interesting. I started like watching them all interact. I kind of watch politics happen. Like I kind of watch how they're like, okay, I only film with these people. I don't film with this person. This person films with me, but I don't film with that person. I'm like, holy fucking crap. It's crazy.
Were there a lot of ideas that would get turned down by people?
No. And no one was, no, you know how YouTube, like you're very selective on what you posted.
Yeah.
TikTok was different for the fact that they posted everything. And like, that was the thing of like, even on my main account, on TikTok, I post like once every like few weeks because I really care about like what I'm posting because I want it to do well. Where like some people just get a shit ton of content out and it works. Oh my God, it works.
You think both those styles work?
Yeah. I think it's all subjective because it's like some people need to eat up content every day. There's this one guy I'm watching, Sean Gatz. Sean posts every single day and he's working on a house and it's like every single day you get an update on what he's working on. And to me, that's sick. And it's like, I would want to watch that every day. If I watch that once a week, I don't think it'd be as entertaining. I want to see every day what it's like, you know?
Yeah.
So it just depends on the person.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so you guys start blowing up.
Yep.
All eyes are on you guys.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, where is your YouTube channel in the midst of all this TikTok hype?
Oh, mine's doing very well. This is right when I started blowing up. Like, when Hype House blew up, that's when my vlog started blowing up because I decided I wasn't posting in TikToks. I would post my clips to TikTok, and that would then blow up the videos, and I kind of had, like, a system going where every time I would vlog a video, I would get the most prominent highlight, put it onto TikTok, and be like, if you want the full video, go check it out on YouTube, and that's how it worked.
Were people envious that you were doing that in that house?
No, I think everyone adopted it. That was the thing where, like, I was doing that long before. That's how I initially, like, that's what blew up. Like, before Hype House or anything, I would post these clips, and every day, every time I posted a vlog, I would post those clips, and they start blowing up. And that's why Thomas wanted us to move up there. And so I kept doing it. It just grew in scale when Hype House blew up. And then I started filming with the people like Dixie and Charlie and Bryce and everyone who was kind of like grabbing that hype. And then I kind of just piggybacked on it by filming them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And your AdSense, I assume, was high.
Shit. No, it was shit.
Really?
Yeah, it was like $4.
Oh, wow.
And then $4 to $6.
And you were doing under 8-minute videos.
Mm-hmm. And that's why it was shit. And then my CPM didn't start actually. My CPM went to like $11 after I went into Google Preferred.
Uh-huh.
And then once I was in Google Preferred, but that took like 2 years. So like during the height of it all, like it really wasn't. It wasn't as lucrative. I mean, it was a lot of money, but it wasn't as lucrative as like you hear about these guys making millions of dollars in a month. I was doing views that should have made me $1 million in a month.
Was there anything that made you want to do longer videos to try and get 3 ads in it? Or
no. Everyone was like, dude, I'll make double the amount of money I'm making right now if I did that. And I was just like, no. Like, that's, I feel like I prefer to grow and get bigger than take a payday. Because it's like, you know, you can only be popular for so long, you know?
Did you have a formula for how much money you were putting back into your content?
No, and I should have because I lost a lot of money doing that.
Really?
Yeah, I think it was something where it's like I wanted to do like the whole structure of like I'm putting all my money back into my videos. And
you wanted to do that?
Yeah, it just doesn't work when it's not a profitable like thing like that. I think I was making like $5,000, sometimes $10,000 a video towards the end of it, and I was putting in like I think $15,000, $20,000 a video. So it was like, you know, and I was doing once a week at that time. So like at a certain point, I was wasting around like $70,000 a month on content.
Was that stressing you out?
No, because I thought it was an investment like into my thing. And I think it was just the videos. This is right when YouTube started dying down. So when TikTok started really taking away from YouTube, I think that was started happening in 2021, 2022. And that was when like, you know, everyone who had 3 million views all of a sudden the next day were doing 500,000. And everyone's like, what the fuck? And that happened to everyone. Except for, like, if you were, like, Logan Paul, David Dobrik, all the, like, big-ass names where it didn't matter and no one would notice.
Right.
But it's crazy, yeah. Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
What was the biggest waste of money on your bits, where you spent way too much, you got nothing out of it, maybe you didn't even post it?
There's a few things that, like, it was never like an obnoxious purchase, because I think I had those a lot more planned out. Like, if I had a helicopter landing on my driveway, I kind of mapped the whole entire idea out.
How much was that?
$5,000? It wasn't as much as I thought it'd be. Like,
for you, is there contemplating that, or are you like, no, I need it?
No, because to me, it's memories too. I think the around this time, it's like I started vlogging. I remember this is I started vlogging because I wanted to do something with our lives. I would see all my friends that were just getting high and sitting around on a couch, and it's like, I have aspirations of doing well monetarily and success-wise, and I want to obviously look after them as well. And I was like, these are memories where we're going to tell our kids. It's like, you know, oh, look at that helicopter in the sky. Dad had one of those land on the fucking driveway. It's like, those are cool stories I think I could tell my kids that justified the purchase at that time. And I could afford it at the time. So that was something really sick.
Do you ever go back and watch those old videos?
No. I think it was something where I was just not... I think down the line I will, but now I understand how I felt in those time, and it's like I don't really want to like revisit that.
Do you rewatch your music videos?
No. I come up with my music videos too. And like that's something where like I feel like I should, but I don't know. I don't know why I don't. I just don't.
What stressed you out the most about YouTube when you were posting?
Staying relevant. That was the biggest thing, I think. You're not, unless you like a lot of time, like, unless you're a huge name that has done a ton of things, you're not really safe, I think. Like, it's really easy for you to just kind of get forgotten. I think with TikTok, it was like, TikTok was driving all my views. Like, if I posted a TikTok, I got 20 million views. If I posted a YouTube video, I got 500,000. It was like, so at a certain point, I was just like, do I quit the thing that makes me the money? Because TikTok at the time wasn't making me money. And, like, it famously hasn't, you know? So it's like something where, like, do I just try and go for brand deals and stuff like that? And like I ended up doing that because it was just a lot easier. And music I love. So
what were your favorite partnerships you did?
I love working with DoorDash and Verizon. Like those two are just great, because they like a lot of companies sometimes don't have the capital to spend behind them, but also I think I love working with companies who understand, like, hey, I know my audience, if I post this will do well. And they were really, really easy on like what I could do, and it worked out. And 8sleep's awesome. Have you seen? Have you heard of them? Oh, the bed company. Oh,
do
amazing.
Oh, do they have the headphones in the mattress?
No, they have the vibrator in the mattress that like wakes you up and shakes you.
Oh, that's sick.
But it's split in half, and it's cold on one side and hot on one side. And it was like something where I sleep so hot, I use the cold side. But they literally were like, "Do whatever the fuck you want." I did whatever I want. I got 15 million views, and they're like, "All right, do it again." And so we just kept doing it, working together. And I was like, "Fuck yeah."
Yeah.
I love it.
Did you invest your money?
I should have. No, to this day, I still don't. You're like this fucking idiot.
No, not at all. I think it's something.
I have a lot of liquid, but I don't know what to do with it.
I think a lot of people, especially in this, they come into the money and they just are so lost with what to do.
I bought watches and cars, and watches have proved me fine so far, and cars, I've never lost a dollar.
Oh, that's great.
I've always made money, but I sold all my cars. I have all my watches. I haven't sold any of those, but yeah, I sold all the cars. I just have a TRX and a Tesla.
I don't know what a TRX is.
A truck.
Cool. Okay.
Like a pickup truck.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because I surf. I love surfing.
Do you?
Yeah.
Where do you surf?
A lot of times the Point in Malibu.
Okay.
Yeah.
But. Is that, you're from Carlsbad. Is that landlocked? Like, is that pretty far from the coast, I mean?
Mm-mm.
You're nearby?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not bad at all.
Can you see any of the members of Hype House speaking out about how it was?
No. I mean, maybe. I don't know. I think, here's the thing. I think it's a headache, and a headache that no one wants to deal with, because it will inevitably probably end in lawsuits. And I think that's the thing that sucks, I think. But it's also, it's so in the past that I don't think, there's so many people who have made a career already who, it's like, it wouldn't benefit them talking about it. You know, like for me, like I won't even talk about it. I give little like fuck yous, like kind of like randomly, but it's kind of like because I'm so happy where I'm at that it's like I can finally look back and be like, you know what, this was, you know, fucked up, and I can say it's fucked up because I care about myself now. And I think a lot of times back then it was so easy to like be surrounded by so many people who are picture perfect in the social media eye, and then it's kind of like, oh, I'm not that, you know. And I don't know, I'm more confident now, and so I can kind of be like, you know, that was a little fucked up.
how much of that Hype House audience, all those people, have carried over that are still watching you, still supporting your music, still listening to you? Would you say that's a majority of still those people? Or did you have to cultivate a whole new audience?
I think when I posted the song, it cultivated an audience, like a new audience. I think a lot of people who are, because I still post content. Like, that's the thing. I haven't gone full music. Like, I still post.
But not on YouTube.
No, I still post content on TikTok. And, like, that was my big, I've 15, almost 16 million followers on there.
Crazy.
So it's like, it doesn't feel real. I don't associate, I don't know if you do this, but I don't associate it with actual people because I feel like that's actually nuts. But, no, I don't think that a lot of them went over. I think it was a whole new... I'm like the niche dead parent person on TikTok, I feel like.
Yes.
So it's like... But I don't think anyone before was like, oh, I love Hype House because my parents are dead. Where people are like, I love Alex because he represents something that I... That was like for me when I lost my dad and when I was, you know, my mom was extremely abusive. I think that was something for me where I would constantly like be like, I'd see Logan Paul and I'd see David and I'd see all these people and I'm like, that doesn't happen to people who go through what I went through. That happens to people who maybe had some adversity, but then they overcame that adversity, but they still had the support of people, so that way they could have a different plan. And A, was I wrong? B, it was something where like I felt like powerful that I could be able to say, hey, I did this and you can do it too. Just because you lost someone and you may be in a really shit position in your life right now does not mean you're not able to make this step in your life.
Right.
You know?
Your first song was about your father.
Yeah.
What was that songwriting process like?
That was... I was 15. 14 or 15, one of the... Or 13. No, 15. I was 15. And I was in my room with a guitar. And I think my biggest thing is I felt like when I was 9, I couldn't understand the magnitude of losing my father. And I think that's something that, like, you know, it didn't hit me until I started seeing, like, father-daughter dances and stuff when I was, like, 15. And I was like, holy shit, I don't have a dad.
When did he pass?
He passed when I was 9. So this is 6 years later. And, like, this is where it, like, finally hit me where I'm like, holy fucking shit. And I just broke down crying. And I was like, I need to talk about this. And therapy was expensive. And I couldn't go to therapy because my mom wouldn't pay for it. And it was just like... I think I'm just going to sit down and write my thoughts. And so I wrote it down on a piece of paper, started playing a 4-chord progression on the guitar, and then...
Who were you listening to at the time?
I wasn't really listening to much. Like, I wasn't listening to a lot of people, funny enough.
I mean, music-wise, sorry.
Yeah, no, I know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, it was like maybe like... I think Shawn Mendes just blew up at that time, so it's like, you know, you heard some of that songs, but it was kind of... Yeah, I think I ripped off part of Stitches. But then once Jake came in, we changed a little bit of it. But yeah, it was Shawn Mendes was a huge inspiration, which is cool. I met him the other day.
Twice, right?
Yeah, how'd you know that?
I listen.
Okay. Yeah, Shawn, I met him at Coachella, and I don't know. I think the biggest thing was like I just wanted to say hey, like... It was something for me where it was so important that he's the reason why I'm doing this, or at least why I got into it. And so I wanted to like just say hey. And so I introduced myself and I was like, we have a lot of mutual people. Like I work with his vocal coach. I just had surgery with his ENT. And so he's like, oh, fuck yeah. The next day I'm at vocal lessons when I get back from Coachella and he's at the door and I'm like, what the fuck? And he's like, what's up, Alex? And he remembered me and he was just talking. We had a full 30-minute conversation about the surgery because I was super anxious about it. And he is so nice. It's disgusting. And he's so tall. And the dude is so hot. It's weird.
Yeah.
It's weird. I don't know. He was made in a lab. But I love him. I want to be friends with him so bad.
What kind of connection did you feel with him? Because he broke from Vine.
I think, that's for me, it's like, oh, cool, it's possible. But right. The connection, I think, was just... I don't know. I think he doesn't act like he's famous. And I think I like that a lot. Like, he was just very much like he took the time to talk.
Ready to roll into savings? Visit Dave Gill Chevrolet at 4700 East Broad Street in Columbus, your hometown Chevy experts. Right now, take advantage of tariff-busting deals on some of our most popular models. Experience the bold new 2025 Silverado 1500 with its powerful V8 engine and cutting-edge tech. Or discover the all-electric 2025 Chevy Equinox EV for an eco-friendly commute without compromising style or range. Looking for value? Browse our extensive inventory of certified pre-owned vehicles. From sporty coupes to family-friendly SUVs, each rigorously inspected for your peace of mind. Cruise over to Dave Gill Chevrolet or visit us online today at DaveGillChevy.com and drive home happy.
To me, he didn't, you know, when you talk to someone, they're kind of like trying to get out of the conversation. Not once, dude hugged me and everything. I was like, damn, fuck yeah.
What's your day-to-day like now versus what it was 2-3 years ago?
It's weird. I'll have like a week where I don't do anything. Like, because, I don't have anything scheduled. And then all of a sudden I have the busiest 2 weeks of my entire life, because you have sessions, and kind of the way music industry works is like, you're not always just writing things. Like, there are people who are writing, like if you're Ed Sheeran, you're writing all the time because that dude is fucking talented. But like, randomly I'll have something come to my head, and you go into voice memos, you put it in, and then you go into a session that you scheduled like way in advance, and you're like, hey, I want to work on this. I have a book called Alex's Songbook, and it has every single song I want to write, everything I've gone through, all these things, and then you go in, and I have a very amazing group of writers and producers who help me put the ideas to life, where Ed knows how to do it all himself. So Ed will just literally go into a room whenever the fuck he wants and just write 8 hits in one night, and it's just fucking nuts.
Have you written with anyone like that?
I work with a lot of cool writers who've done like, you know, like, nah, honey, I'm good, I could have another butter pro. Like, he did that. The writers I work with are really sick. I love them. But I haven't worked with any famous people, no.
You've only done singles.
Yes. Working on an EP right now.
EP? How many songs?
I don't even know. I wanted to do an album, but I think an EP is like the safer bet, I think.
In terms of what?
Well, when you put out an album, it's this whole thing. And it's like, here is a compilation of my work that I've worked on for the last, who God knows how many years. And it's like, you know, I've been working on mine for 2 years now, 3 years. And it's like, that, to me, I think I want to have a song blow up before I put out an album, because I want it to kind of get the attention it deserves. Because my entire, like, album or EP or whatever I'm working on is very much, it's like mentally healthy for me to do, you know? Like, it's just about my mom passing away, or like all these different things, and it all sums up into one thing at the end where it's like, you'll be all right. And it's like, everyone asks us, like, if you could speak to yourself at 9 years old, what would you say? Like, what would you tell yourself? And it's like, I wrote a song exactly like that, what I would tell myself, because I always got that question, and I think that's the song it ends on. So the whole project will probably be called You'll Be All Right, Kid.
How many songs would you try to have done before you narrow it down?
I have 30-40 songs probably done that I like. It just comes down to which ones I want to put out, and if my label is like, okay, let's run with it.
Who's your label?
I'm with Atlantic Records. Love them.
Insane.
They have some awesome people, but they also just are great people. Like, you hear horror stories about the music industry. I don't think I've had any of those moments where it's like, oh my God, you know?
Who reached out to who on that?
They reached out to me. Wow. After One More I Love You, everyone emailed me. And I took meetings, and I was like, I don't want to sign right now. I don't think I need to. And then I put out a few more records, and I was like, fuck, this would actually help me. Like, it's not like they have a magic button that they press and you just magically become a hit overnight like they used to. Like, when it was radio, they could just press a button, put a fuck ton of money behind you, and then you would be on the radio everywhere, and you'd be a superstar like that. Now it's like, you need to curate a lot of different things. So it was something where I was like, oh, I don't need it, like, you know, whatever. And then I ended up taking those meetings again a year later, and I was like, you know what, Atlantic's the only people who didn't say they liked me. They didn't say they liked me. They were like, you're not that great right now, you could be a lot better, and we want to help you get better. And I was like, fuck yeah, I'm going with you. Like, that was the thing. Everyone else was just like, oh, you're perfect, you're great, you're a perfect fit for us. I was like, oh, thanks, but like, that's not going to help me be a better musician. I don't want to be perfect. Like, I want to be better, you know?
What was the signing like?
Dude, I didn't have like the cool-ass fucking signing everyone gets.
Says that now.
No, yeah. It was something where it's like, you know, I was expecting like, you know, to walk into an office, like, everyone's there, you have like a fucking notepad and you sign, and I don't think I would have liked that either. I hate the attention. Like, I hate.
Did you get a DocuSign?
Yeah.
Really?
Got a fucking DocuSign.
Oh, I was kidding.
No, yeah. I was in the airport in Nashville just finishing a session. I just finished a writing camp in Nashville. And I'm in the airport. My flight is delayed an hour. And I have it on video. I filmed it. I signed my fucking label deal on a DocuSign while waiting for a layover.
That's so funny. How many pages?
The DocuSign was just 2 pages. It wasn't like, because my lawyer went through the label deal and then just sent me the DocuSign for me to sign and then compiled it all. Yeah.
Jeez.
So just had the terms of the deal, like very simplified, you know, because they have a 70-page docket that they give you after you accept the normal terms. I just signed the normal terms.
You went from creating YouTube videos that you can just come up with an idea, film it that day, and literally post it that day.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're signed to somebody who has to approve what you're doing with a team of people.
Well, the beautiful thing is with my deals, they don't. Like, that's I have full veto power. And that was, like, something important for me. It was like, I don't want to sign if I can't decide what happens. But that being said, I rely on their decisions because I'm still new. People have been doing this their entire lives professionally and don't even get to the point where I'm at right now. And for me, I've been doing this for 3 years. I don't know everything. I can't sit there in a room and write a full song from start to finish, produce it, put it up and fucking, you know, market it and do everything like that. You know, where like some people can. I'm still learning. And so I value their input because they hear hundreds of songs every single day to put out where I just work on my single shit. So it's like, it's tunnel vision and I'm fully aware of it and I don't want to be ignorant because my art could get better and it's like to have people help that would be awesome.
What kind of push or big help have they done so far for you that you didn't think you could do on your own?
Just handling things. It's kind of, it's not like, because you can do a lot of things independently now if you have enough money. And I was paying for my music videos. My music videos were $30,000 to $50,000 and I would pay for them out of pocket and just handle everything. And then when I would go to post a song, I would literally just write it, and I'm blessed to be able to do that. No one can fucking do that, and that's fucking sick that I could do it. It felt lonely. And
write
it
your own music video, you're saying?
Yeah. Right, like, because I came up with them, I would just hire my friend Jake, which Jake is fucking insane. If you've ever heard of Jake the Shooter, he's an insane music video director. But it was something where I felt very alone, and I felt like I didn't know what I was doing because I did not know what I was doing. And there's a powerhouse of a record label who know they don't know exactly what they're doing, but they have an idea. And it's like, oh, hey, I have this idea. Can you help me with it? And there's a whole team. I have like 30 people on my label who actually are like working with me. And it's just so nice to know that I have these different people kind of like they have a piece of it so that you know that they're working on it. Some people don't get that though. Some people give away half their shit and then people still don't work on it because they're greedy.
Right.
So I'm very, very lucky in that sense that I have a team that actually works.
You like doing your live shows?
Yes. I'm nervous as fuck always because I think when you make music like me, you can't hide behind autotune, which sucks. Like, because, you know, you melodyne the record if you know anything about music. That's individually fixing a note on a song. So if I sing something flat in the record, instead of just fucking off and putting a ton of autotune on it, like where you'd hear like Post Malone and Kid Laroi and all that stuff, like they're good singers, but they also, their style of music has a lot of autotune. So when you do a live show, even if they're sick, you can literally just crank the tune and no one will notice the difference because it sounds exactly like the record, which is so funny because Post can sing very, very well. But like with kind of like the I'd say like a Louis Capaldi, Adele-esque type of music. It's very like raw vocal, no tune type of thing. So when I do the live show, I have to be on or off. Like there's not an in-between. You're either not singing or you're singing perfect. And that for a lot of things is really fucking scary. Especially when these songs mean so much. Like so many people are like, oh, this song saved my life. And it's like you want to do that song justice. You want it to sound like the record. You want it to to make them feel that certain way. And it's very difficult to do that for a lot of songs.
Would there be any collaborations on your EP?
No, I don't think so. That's the thing. It's so difficult. Like, I feel like I'm in the politics aspect of music. And I also haven't proved myself yet. Like, I have 1.5 million monthly listeners, which is fucking insane. And it's nuts. But, like, you can't really get a lot of features with that, which is weird. I thought you could. But, no, yeah. I don't know. I don't think I will, Bev.
What's the revenue like on that size?
I actually don't know.
You don't do that? You don't pay attention to that?
Mm-mm. Which, again, blessed to not have to pay attention to that. But, yeah, I have no idea how much money I make on music, which I feel like I should.
Yeah.
But I thankfully have people who I pay to do that.
At your live shows,
yeah,
you have a fiance.
I do.
Is she at every show?
Every show. Every show. I think she's only missed 3 shows, and that's because I was on a tour bus that she couldn't fit on, and then she kind of just snuck on and just slept in a literal fucking bunk this wide.
With the two of you?
Yeah. And we were literally like for 2 weeks on the road doing that. And she loves being a part of it. It helps me a lot because I get really, really, really bad anxiety before a show. And she'll help me calm down. I throw up a few times and she's there patting my back. And I'm like, God damn, I have it lucky. You know, I love her. I love her so much. So it's cool. I always fuck with her. I bring her on stage because it's just funny to me. It's
What's her reaction like on that?
She's like, why the fuck am I up here? Yeah. And like, literally, I would be like, all right, guys, this is my fiance Cobra because I like to show her off. And I'm just like, look at this. And I'm like, she said yes to me. And it's just fun. I do it every show. It's awesome.
You guys went from being homeless.
Yeah.
To now where you are.
Yeah.
What was your relationship like in the beginning? Because you guys started out friends right away.
In the beginning, rocky. In the really, really, really beginning, it was something where she and I were doing long distance. And I think the whole thing is we hadn't met yet, and so she was kind of entertaining other people.
What were you doing? How did you guys find each other?
Snapchat, funny enough.
Who added who?
I saw her on my friend's story because my friend, she moved out to Hawaii and was looking for a roommate, moved in with Cover somehow. And I saw Cover on her story and I was like, that girl's the most beautiful girl I've ever seen. I need to fucking talk to her.
And she was living in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm. And at the time she had a boyfriend and I was like, oh, I can't talk to you. Like I don't do that. Like I won't talk to someone who has a boyfriend. And she was like, oh, like, and they ended up breaking up or whatever. But then, you know, we were talking for 4 months long distance and we had never met. So it was like, it wasn't, I viewed it as dating and committed, and she was kind of going around and seeing other people, which caused some issues. But then she moved out, and once she moved out, it was kind of like, we were like, I was like, you and I, we're that, no one else, nothing else, we're good.
She left Hawaii to move in with you?
Yeah, so I told her I had a place to stay.
Which was a lie.
Which was the lie, yep.
Like a complete lie.
Yeah. I was sleeping in cars, so it wasn't like, yeah, no, I lied. And she came out and I fully expected her to slap me in the face, turn around and go back home. And she goes, fuck it. And we went to In-N-Out that night and I introduced her to In-N-Out. And because it was the only thing I could afford, and I would ask for a water cup and fill it up with soda. I knew all the cheat codes to make it all cheap. Every meal I paid for was $3.79 or something like that, which I was like, fuck yes, bro. I got a full meal for $3. And we would go to In-N-Out every single night, and I still to this day it's my favorite food. And then I saved up all the money that I could, and I borrowed some money from my friends, and I got us a motel night for our first night together, which is so funny, a Motel 6 by the water.
And then at what point did you start making money on YouTube? What was that like for the two of you? Because you both started out at rock bottom.
Yeah, so
it's insane.
We would sleep on my friends. When I got a job at Fish 101, my friend
called. At where?
Fish 101. It's a
restaurant?
A restaurant, yeah. I was a busser, and I was filming the vlogs when I wasn't working, and my friend Colin would let us sleep in his bed. And so me, Cover, and Colin would sleep in a bed. And literally the next day, we worked at the same place that he'd take me to work. Cover would go to the Starbucks next door and just, you know, work on whatever. And then when I started making more money doing the vlogs, I quit that job. And I just said, I'm going to fully go for this. Pardon me, I'm sorry, I have the hiccups. But yeah, so I started making $2,000. $2,000 a month back then in 2019, I made $2,000 in a month, and I was like, it started at 500, went to 1,000, then 1,500, then 2,000. If I give it everything, I'll make 2,500. And so I stopped doing the job, and I started working YouTube, and I made 3,500 the next month.
What was your posting cadence?
Every 3 days. Or no, three times a week.
Three times a week.
And so then I made 3.5. Then since I quit, I started posting every single day.
How many subscribers were you at?
200,000, maybe 300,000 at that time. And it just went from there. It went very quickly up. And then from there, I made 7,000, 10,000, 20,000, 50,000.
Were you losing your mind?
Yes. And it was also something where it all happened so quick, I spent it all. I spent every single dollar.
On the videos or on what?
Everything. On the videos. I the only thing I bought was a car. And I bought like a BMW and I put $10,000 down. But like all my money was spent into like making the videos or the rent. I paid for all my friends' rent. I paid for things for them. And it was something where like, you know, if they're being in the videos. And then it hit a point where I was like, I can't keep doing this. Like you guys have to like get a job or I'll make a YouTube video channel for you. Made them YouTube channels, set them up, gave them video ideas, edited for them, filmed it for them, all that stuff. And then, yeah, it's pretty cool.
That's so sick.
I know. Yeah, but I spent it all the first year, second year, and then this year is the first year I actually saved my money.
Oh, that's great.
I know. I finally had like a realization that I need to stop being a fucking degenerate. So it's all good. I sold all my cars. I kind of just like saved all my money, and I was like, fuck, I feel great.
How'd you propose to your fiance?
Breckenridge. We, it's in Colorado. And gosh, this whole day I was scared shitless. I woke up sick, first of all, which I was like, of course today I wake up sick. So I'm like in pajamas and a sweatshirt, so she doesn't know anything different.
Where were you hiding the ring?
In my pocket. I had it in a box, and we went on a ski lift because I didn't know exactly where I wanted to do it. I knew like the spot where I wanted to, but there was just a ton of people there, and I was like, I don't want to just drop one knee when there's a ton of people. I want it to be intimate. We take a ski lift up to like the top. There's a restaurant up there, and we look around, and I'm like, this is shit. Like, there's no visibility. Like, I want her to see the ring. I don't want to drop it and lose it forever. So we went back down in the ski lift. I dropped the ring.
Are you like panicking?
Yes, I'm fucking terrified. I'm like, I want to throw up. I want to just propose, because
is it in a box?
Yeah, it's in a box. It dropped out of my pocket right in front of her. I go, oh, shoot. Grab it, put it in my pocket. She didn't know any wiser, dude. I could have dropped the craziest shit, and she would have never seen it. And I'm like, that's nuts. You aren't paying attention. I thought for sure she was like, I'm like, she knows. Michael started coming up. My friend was like, dude, you're being so sus. She knows. When do you ever want to just take pictures? I'm like, oh, I want to find a cute place to take a picture, you know? Like, for... You know, and I couldn't explain why I wanted to take a picture. And so he's like, bro, she knows. And the minute I dropped it, I'm like, this bitch doesn't know. She does not know. And then, yeah, I dropped down. We were having a snowball fight. She literally threw a snowball as hard as she could at my face. And as she's going to grab another snowball, I drop down on one knee. And she turns around, and she's got a snowball in her hand. And if you watch the video, she's got a snowball in her hand. And she looks at me, and she goes, no fucking way. And she doesn't believe me. She thought I was just fucking with her, because I would always pretend to propose to her because I didn't want her to know the day. You know, and so there's so many times where she thought I was going to propose, and I didn't want to give it away, and so it was sick.
And there's a big part of your content, too, was her saying, when are you going to marry me? The ring, correct?
Oh, a huge part of it.
So did you even have a conversation? Are you serious? Do you actually want to do this together? Or was it kind of just known?
It was known from the start. That was the thing. Like, Cover, from like the second time we started talking on Snapchat, was like, we should get married. Like, it was very much like, I don't know like how many people have this type of relationship, like, but it was very like a high school relationship in the beginning, because we were in high school practically. But it was very much like, I want to have a family with you, I want a kid. Like, it was very apparent. And then once we moved in, nothing changed. And so for the last 4.5 years of our relationship, almost 5 years now, she has constantly made it known that she wanted to get married. I grew up in a broken home, pretty much. My dad and my mom were going to get a divorce, but my dad was diagnosed with cancer. So they stayed unhappily married, and I watched them stay married unhappily for 9 years. And that, to me, was something where I don't want to, A, put my kids through that. B, I don't want to put someone through that either. Like, I don't want to be with someone who is miserable, you know, like, or like being like, I don't want to, the fact that I'm with them makes them miserable, you know? So I wanted to make sure everything, you know? So throughout, I was like, you know, 4 years or 5 years of being with you, if I still feel like I could absolutely like fall in love with you over and over again, you're the person. And I think there was just one night where it was like our 4 year anniversary, and we're out at dinner, and I'm staring at this girl, and I'm like, holy fucking shit. Like, I feel like I'm on a first date. I feel like I'm marrying you, or I feel like I'm meeting you for the first time again. And it's like, to this day, I still fall in love with her more and more every single day. And it's like, I'm not just saying that. I genuinely love this girl. And it's crazy. Like, it's nuts. Like, I don't want to like go look at someone. I don't want to go do anything with another girl. Like, I genuinely just want to be with her. And I'm like, all right. And I texted her grandma, and she made me a ring. It was sick.
Her grandma made the ring?
Yeah, the ring that she's wearing right now, she made it for her.
What did you do right after?
Right after I proposed?
Yeah. How'd you celebrate?
We got in the car. We called our parents because I asked them for their blessing. So it was kind of like, oh, sick. Like, you know, that was, oh, talk about nerves, bro. Did you get the parents' blessing?
I talked to her mom like a few months before, and that was, she like went inside for like 5 minutes, and
bro,
I was able to have that conversation.
We went to Hawaii, and I was like, oh, I really want to go to Hawaii. Like, let's go. And cause her family lives in Hawaii, like she's from Hawaii, and we go to a barbecue, and I quite literally, I'm shitting myself. They finally go inside, and I go, no one told me how to do this. No one, like, so forgive me if this sounds like really bad. I said that, I go, I didn't have a dad growing up, so I don't know what the proper way to do this
is. Oh my God. I wish I was there to watch this.
I was like, but I love your daughter so very much. She is the absolute fucking perfect person, and I want to spend the rest of my life with your daughter. Can I please have your blessing to marry her? They both broke down crying, and I was like, they were like, oh my God, it was amazing. It was so good. And I was so nervous going up to it, and I shouldn't have been, because it was like, you know, they truly love us together. They love me, and it's so sick. I'm so happy. But yeah, that was so fucking scary.
So when she made the ring, she mailed it to you?
Yeah. God, that was also stressful. There was a fucking box, and Kima, she made it custom. And so Cover has sent me rings from the beginning of the time we started dating. And I took all the rings and I kind of made a ring that is all has all the great parts of all of them, and it encapsulates into one ring. And I forgot I fucking ordered it, or like I forgot that she was sending it. So when I get a package, I'm like, what is this fucking package?
Did she see it?
No, but she's like, I don't know, sweetheart. And I'm like, I'm opening it. And she goes, oh, it's from my grandma. Immediately close it. Immediately close it. I go to my studio and I'm like, and she goes, what did she send you? I go, oh, she was just sending me, like, I have a medical bracelet because of the bullet in my lung. Yeah. And so I was like, oh, she just sent me some cleaner for the medical bracelet. And she's like, okay. I'm like, there's no way you bought that. Oh, there's so many times where I thought she was going to fucking, someone almost fucking ruined it too. I told a ton of people that I was going to Breckenridge to propose. But before, I was supposed to propose in Big Bear, but Big Bear didn't snow. And she's from Hawaii. She's never seen snow. She wanted to go see snow. And I wanted to do it in snow because, like, that, she's always going to remember that with snow and, like, a good feeling. I forgot to fucking do it. Not forgot. I didn't do it in the beginning of December. I did it at the end of December. And so someone who didn't know that I didn't do it was like, how'd the proposal go? In front of me and Cover. And I go, what the fuck are you talking about? And they go, you didn't do the proposal. Oh, and I go, yeah, I'm so sorry. I have no idea what you're talking about. And turned around and Cooper goes, what was that about? I have no idea.
That's so funny.
I know. So it's like starting to fucking wonder how Cooper didn't know.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Did you just graze over there's a bullet in your lung?
Yeah. Oh, I feel like you knew that.
I didn't know that one.
Oh, yeah. My friend's dad shot me with a, it's like a little smaller than a 22 LR, if you're familiar with your guns. It's kind of like a BB. But he was with an air rifle. And he had pointed at me and he goes, fuck, what did he say? He didn't know it was loaded. And I ran. And he shot me in the back. It went through my leg.
By accident?
Yeah, like he didn't. I was filming a vlog. Like, that's the thing. It was on camera. And I ended up deleting the footage because I didn't want him to get in trouble because he was like a father figure to me. Yeah. But we filmed it. Like, my friend Rylan, if you know who Rylan Storms is, had my camera, was filming it all go down. And he had said, film this, it's going to be funny. And then I walk outside and he goes, run. Doesn't think it's loaded. Shoots me in the back. I get shot in the liver, shoots up, goes around my heart, barely misses, and then plunges into my lung. And so it like cut like a few nerves. I was bleeding internally for a good, the pain. Oh my God. I can't even imagine what it's like to get shot with like a 9mm or like those gnarly ass rounds. Cause this was fucking crazy. Like it hurt so bad. At the time I kept saying kill me. Like it was that bad. Like it was almost as if someone had a knife in your stomach and was just doing that. Not fun.
You went to the hospital right away?
Yeah.
This was in a vlog bit?
It was supposed to be. It's kind of like, have you ever, you vlog, right?
Yeah. Or
you,
yeah.
Have you ever had someone take your camera?
Yeah.
And then been like, well, like you weren't there. And then once you walk in, they like film something for you.
Yeah.
So my friend's dad was like, here, film this. It'll be funny. And he has my friend holding my camera. It's like a Nikon D3300 with like a Rode mic on top of it. And he picks up this air rifle and he goes, he doesn't know it's loaded, but his sons just were playing with it out back. And I walk outside and he goes, run. And they filmed the whole entire thing. And then I ended up deleting the footage because the cops, obviously when you go to the hospital for a GSW, the cops come.
Gunshot wound?
Yeah. And so like they're like, how did this happen? I'm like, it's ricochet. It flew off a rock. Like all this stuff. It's crazy. When in reality, you just shot me.
How did I not know this?
I don't know.
Did you post
anything? It's my entire personality. Yeah. It's my entire, I'm the dead dad kid who got shot. Like that's why.
That's fucking.
Yeah, nothing else.
Oh my God. Okay, so back to the proposal.
Yeah.
Back to love.
Love.
Now you propose, you guys are planning your wedding.
Yeah.
When's that?
That's in June next year. I'm really, really fucking excited for that. That's something where like, I'm very, like the Cover's dream wedding, I want her to fully have it. My whole thing is as long as I'm getting married to you and I can have my friends there, I don't care what it is. Have me in pink, have me in tan. I don't care what color I'm wearing. I don't care what suit I'm wearing. As long as it's like, as long as you're happy and I know that you're not stressed and you had the best night of your life, it'll be the best night of my life. That type of thing. And so she's like, okay, cool. And she's having a blast. She's fucking planning out her dream princess wedding. I'm wearing tan, I think. Everything. She's like, oh, do you want this? I'm like, yes. Do you want it? And she's like, yes. And I'm like, perfect. It's the easiest thing. Because, like, you hear about weddings and, like, they're very stressful. I mean, you just had one.
Yeah.
They're stressful as shit. I don't know how yours was. Like, were you involved in it heavily? Or?
Yeah, I was definitely involved in it heavily. But as a groom, there's a lot less responsibility.
Yeah.
And that I will never fully understand the stress that she had for taking on the big responsibility.
For sure.
Because as much as it is about me too, it's also really about her. I mean, no one looks at the groom suit. Everyone looks at the bride's dress.
Yeah, and like my whole thing is like I would elope tomorrow and spend the rest of my life with you as long as we're married. Like it doesn't, this is something, in my opinion, something like this magical night that we're both going to have, but it's something that means a lot to you and I want it to be perfect for you.
Yeah.
And it's like that's where I'm at, you know?
That's what we did. We eloped at the Santa Barbara Courthouse back in July and we didn't tell anybody about it.
Mm-hmm.
And just our family was there. And I think that was the coolest thing because we got to have two weddings. And we had that entire month of just the two of us. Like, we're fucking married. No one knows about this.
Yeah.
And like, she had the ring and everything, but no one knew about it.
That's sick.
And then we had the real party wedding because we also wanted our friend to be the minister, I guess.
Yeah.
And
the guy who shot me is going to be mine.
Oh, great. Maybe he'll do it again. We wanted him to do it, but he wasn't ordained. So we had to go to the courthouse anyway to get it done.
Yeah.
And I think that made it even more special that we had that entire month where just the two of us knew the secret and no one else knew.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know.
That's sick, dude. Are you going to have kids?
Yeah.
When are you planning on?
Probably in like a year or two because we want to enjoy the time now and just kind of just travel and do our thing.
Mm.
And I think that's a special time, too, that we have to really appreciate.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, Cover just wants to pop them out now.
How many?
She wants three, I think. No more than that. She has PCOS and endometriosis, if you know what that is. She has cysts on her ovaries. So after 28, she'll have to freeze her eggs.
How old is she now?
She's 23.
Oh, okay.
So I think we're going to start in a year or two. We're just like, I mean, we're both, I'm 22. Like, yeah. We're young, but it's also like, she wants to be a young mom. I thankfully can financially support kids. And I'm excited. My whole entire life, I feel like has been, like, I feel like I've been living in my dad's, like, or emulating what my dad wanted to do. And I think the biggest thing is, like, you know, moving down to San Diego, having a place up here, raising kids down in San Diego, teaching them how to surf, how I grew up, like skate and like be able to ride your bike to the beach. And like, I can't wait to be a dad. It's going to be hard, but like, I cannot wait to be able to like give them a life I didn't have. And I think there's some therapeutic thing in that.
And most of your time now is spent down there?
No, I wish it was. I think the thing is like, I mean, you know how LA is. It's just not necessarily enjoyable. You hear about robberies every fucking 2 minutes here. Like, you hear about shootings here. Like, and you have shootings everywhere, but I think it's just so likely it happens here. There's traffic everywhere. There's not, like, I grew up in the beach. Like, I love being by the ocean. I love the weather by the ocean. I grew up with authentic Mexican food that you don't really get here. And it's like, that's like kind of like, cause we're so close to the border. And it's like, I grew up speaking Spanish. I've lost that. And it's like, I want to learn Spanish again. I want to surf all the time. I want to kind of like, and then come up here, do my music. And then I'll have a studio down there and I'll write down there and learn how to do everything. And it's exciting.
That's so cool.
I know.
Oh,
it's
so
weird.
Happy.
It's weird.
That's
I don't
sick.
Know. Cool. I don't know. Not a lot of people like aspire. Like, a lot of people love it here. Like, and I'm envious of that because it's like, you know, I live here and I hate every day of it. But some people absolutely love it here, which is cool.
Yeah. So what's next for you? Song coming out soon?
Yeah, music. I think a lot of it's just like writing music is really sick. It's also something where like now you have to be, before you could just be a musician, now you have to be a musician and a social media star. I have the social media aspect down, but being able to advertise my music in a way that doesn't come off like everyone else is difficult. I think everyone just sits in front of a car, like sits in a car in front of a phone and goes, I wrote the song of the summer, and then plays the song. And it's like, I feel like I want to figure out a different way to promote it. I just don't know yet. So I don't know. I think right now I'm really focused on like making the music better and figuring out how to kind of like break into, because I feel like my music can help a lot of people. So like, how do I get it in front of more people, you know? And that's the question.
I'm so excited to hear the new songs.
I know. I can't. I'll send you some.
Oh, please.
Yeah. I'll send you the whole thing, and then you can tell me which one your favorite. I'm doing a focus group to see who, like, people who don't know me, what's the best song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
I'm hiring a fuck ton of people. It's going to be sick.
Oh, awesome. Hell yeah.
Mr. B style.
Guys, go check out Alex's songs.
They're yes,
gonna be
please.
Like, the whole Spotify, everything, YouTube channel, music videos, they're going to be linked down below.
Fuck yeah.
Thanks so much for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Lightweights. Right. Out.
Cool. Woo. Thank you, dude.
Thank you, Alex. That was great.
Ready to roll into savings? Visit Dave Gill Chevrolet at 4700 East Broad Street in Columbus, your hometown Chevy experts. Right now, take advantage of tariff-busting deals on some of our most popular models. Experience the bold new 2025 Silverado 1500 with its powerful V8 engine and cutting-edge tech. Or discover the all-electric 2025 Chevy Equinox EV for an eco-friendly commute without compromising style or range. Looking for value? Browse our extensive inventory of certified pre-owned vehicles. From sporty coupes to family-friendly SUVs, each rigorously inspected for your peace of mind. Cruise over to Dave Gill Chevrolet or visit us online today at DaveGillChevy.com and drive home happy.